You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Savor, let it believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good, and it's so hard to do right, when you do wrong, when I turn right, but you turn all the way, let.
Henshaw, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Oh, I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad I'm here, and I'm glad we're all here together with our amazing guest today. We have some happy news in the midst of all of the other news right now. And we are very thankful and grateful to the Indie Songwriting Awards. I won Best Christian Song in their recent competition. So thank you to the Indie Songwriting Awards. We are so grateful. Thank you for this great honor. And we're really grateful to have our guest with us today because I'm going to get some help, you're going to get some help, and we're all going to help each other. Will you please introduce yourself to our friends?
Absolutely. I'm Bethany Johnson. I'm the founder, owner, one of the teachers at Bold and Bright Academy and Bold and Bright Academy Online. And congratulations on your award. That's so exciting.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you so much. I'm so grateful to you, and I'm grateful for you. And I am so thankful we're about to have this conversation today because correcting our children is part of our responsibility as parents, but we want to do it correctly. See what I did there? And so we want to learn from you some better ways to discipline and correct our children who we love so much, and we want them to have amazing lives. So help start us off, first of all. How do we correct our children and still keep that wonderful attachment relationship with them?
I think it's about understanding where they're at and why they're behaving that way. You know, all behavior is a form of communication. So I think getting curious before getting angry might be a big help. Why are they acting that way? Why did they do that? Is it a sensory thing? Is it a feelings thing? Are they in control of their body? Are they in their thinking brain? Kind of just getting curious about what's going on before we rush to assume that there was malintent, especially with younger kids who normally malintent is not the case, you know, like, We call it hangry. We all get a little hangry. You know, we all get tired. Yeah. We all get all those feelings that maybe cause us as adults to act in ways that we may not be proud of. It's the same with kids, just amplified because they don't have a fully developed brain. So definitely taking a moment to get curious about why the behavior happened in the first place. What are they trying to communicate? Because oftentimes it is that they're just tired or hungry or they're not in control of their bodies, you know? So I think that would be the first step. Also taking a moment to make sure that we are regulated as the adult in the situation because our kids don't regulate by being sent off alone. They don't regulate by being yelled at. Being spanked, that's not how they are able to calm their bodies down. Our kids regulate with co-regulation. So if we are able to stay calm and regulate ourselves, eventually our kids' example, right? If they see us freaking out when we're upset, they're probably going to freak out when they're upset. And they're going to freak out when they're upset anyway because they're little. But as they grow older and their brains develop, that's how they're going to learn to handle conflict or anger or disappointment. So if we can be the regulated presence when they're younger, they mm-hmm. will be able to learn to regulate themselves as they get older. So so much of it is developmental. And that's really what I like to impress upon parents, that so much mm-hmm. is just normal and expected, and punishing it is not the way to stop it. Showing them the proper ways to handle these big feelings, these big emotions, or to even notice in their body what's happening, you know, because oftentimes I think we get so flooded by the emotions that our kids have, and our first reaction is to either stop it, you know, stop what they're doing. Yeah. We need to stop it. It's not right. I don't want them acting this way. If they act this way, they're going to grow up to be God knows what. And I don't want people to think that my kid is this. And that's so it's right. either to stop it or it's to fix it. I mm-hmm. hate when my child is sad and uncomfortable, and I need to do whatever I can to make them feel better, you know? And that's a normal human response. The person we love the most, we don't want them feeling sad and hurt and disappointed and angry. That makes us uncomfortable. those are normal parts of human emotions. They are going to deal with feeling sad and hurt and uncomfortable and angry throughout their entire lives. And if we rush to take away that feeling without teaching them how to deal with it, that's not really helping them. And if we punish that feeling, that's also not really helping. So I think mm-hmm. helping them sit with those uncomfortable feelings, helping them understand them and name them, and giving them tools to help them regulate instead of shutting them down is one of the best things we can do for our little ones, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm learning so
and
much
I mean,
from
it
you.
Takes a lot. It takes a lot to sit with our own feelings, right? Like, we all hate feeling sad and uncomfortable, and we all kind of mm-hmm. turn to our own coping mechanisms. Like, I mean, there's so many coping mechanisms that I have that are not healthy, but I'm working through now as an adult, you know?
Yeah.
And whether that was because I was let down from them, from feeling them, or punished for feeling them, or told that, you know, they were dismissed, you know, oh, this isn't a big deal. Why don't you just stop crying? Why are you crying? Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. we wouldn't say that to our best friend who was having we thought their problem was a big deal or not. It is a big problem to them. And whether mm-hmm. your child is upset because you gave them the wrong color plate, you know, like, to them, that is a big deal right now. That's their autonomy, you know. Kids don't have a lot of autonomy in their lives. So, mm-hmm. When we shut that down, it definitely breeds unhealthy coping mechanisms. And I think all of us as adults, if we sit and think about it, can identify our unhealthy coping mechanisms, you know, whether it's doom scrolling, which is one of mine, whether it's eating, whether it's, you know, drinking or whatever we do that to kind of numb whatever feeling we're feeling, you know? And mm-hmm. so I think if we can help them do that early, and understand what's going on in their bodies, in their minds, with other people as well, you know, teaching empathy, then they're hopefully not going to have to turn those unhealthy coping mechanisms when they're older, as we do.
This is so helpful to me, and I know it's helpful to our friends who are listening, because I think a lot of the root cause of anger or difficult discipline is inconvenience. Mm-hmm. You know, people have to work two jobs. They have a lot on their plate. Everything's happening. They just wanted to go in the grocery store, grab something, and come right back out. And now somebody's having a tantrum. Mm-hmm. Or mm-hmm. they were like, you know, you've got to put your clothes on. We've got to leave right now because they're trying to get to work on time. And somebody decides that they don't want to wear the blue boots. You know, that's a tragedy. And so many things are happening, I think, to people. They're overstimulated, they're worried, they're concerned, that's just the one thing they can control is to tell their child to be quiet. No, they can't do anything about the weather or their boss, but they can tell their child to sit down or stop yelling or whatever they're doing. And so I think what you're saying about being regulated ourselves, you know, is so wonderful, because so often the emphasis is on the behavior of the child. Child is acting like that, not how we're acting or how we're thinking or how we're feeling. And so in a world
how we would like them to feel.
Oh, that's a good point. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, in a world where everybody's got their something, I mean, people have something going on just pretty much all the time. What are some strategies that we parents can use to actually correct and discipline our children in a good way?
I definitely acknowledging what's going on in yourself and them, acknowledging that it is normal. It's normal to feel this way, and no feelings are bad. You know, like even just, you know, I understand that you're angry. This is really hard right now, because it is for them. It's hard, and it's hard for us too. And we can say that, like, I'm feeling really overwhelmed right now too. Can I sit with you? Can I just sit over here until you're feeling a little better? And once they're calmed down, once they're able to be regulated, then we can really start the teaching moment, right? Because what we want to do is teach them how to handle these, not to punish them for it, right? Because punishing them isn't really teaching them anything. It's other than, you know, you're in trouble, you know, when you do this. Yeah. But it doesn't teach them how to do better next time. But a lot of the times we're so focused on stopping that immediate behavior because it's uncomfortable for us, or it's inconvenient for us, or whatever the reason, that we're just throwing stuff at them without, you know, hoping something sticks, hoping something gets them to stop that behavior. And then once that behavior is done, we impose a consequence that may not be related to the behavior. It may, you know, be delayed. You know, you can't watch TV for a week, and they're not, by the time the next Friday comes around, they don't even remember what happened. They don't understand why they did that. You know, they don't, it doesn't really stick because it doesn't have anything to do with the behavior. So I think natural consequences are more of the way to go. And instead of just kind of arbitrary taking things away that they love, or things that don't really have anything to do with the behavior, you know, if they're not acting kind to a friend, the natural consequence is their friend might not want to play with them, and they need to learn that. But, you know, if we don't treat people nicely, the consequence is that we might not have many friends, you know? So after they're upset, after the meltdown, and they're back into their thinking brain, that's when we can kind of address what happened. And once again, get curious. What do you think they were feeling when that happened? Do you think that that they felt good? Do you think that if they did that to us, that would make us feel good, that we would want to play with them, you know? So helping them get curious as we're curious, and really teaching them from that mistake instead of just punishing it. And once again, that can't really be done until they're calmed down. If your kid is in a meltdown situation, they are not, nothing you say is going to stick in their brain, because they're not in their thinking brain. They're in their fight or flight mode. Their body is, you know, raging with everything going on inside. They're overwhelmed. So nothing that we're really saying to them in that moment is really getting through. What they need is co-regulation to get through that hard moment, and then we can have our teaching moment, which I think would be laying out the natural consequences that could happen from that. It would be things that don't necessarily equate with just the normal punishment. You know, you're grounded for however long. It's like, okay, well, what are we doing in that moment to help them learn from that? Are they grounded and they're sitting in their rooms doing about how mean you are? Is that really helping them learn about, you know, how to do better next time? Or are they, you know, are they doing something to make up for what they did? Are we helping them make amends, you know? I think, as parents, our job is to be their teachers, and they are going to mess up, and they're going to mess up a lot, and so are we. And so if we can show them what making amends looks like, what fixing our mistakes looks like, what learning from them looks like, and how hard that is, you know, like verbalizing it throughout our day of, I'm really frustrated about this. You know, I think I need a few minutes alone. You know, at the end of my day after teaching preschoolers all day, I've noticed, and it took me years to notice this, that I need a few minutes alone. You know, if I don't have those few minutes to de-stress, to not have anyone talk to me or need me or say my name, if I don't have those few minutes at the end of the day, and I'm just going in go, go, go for the rest of the day after my work day is done, I'm not at my best. So I've noticed with myself, I wish it didn't take so long, that I just need a few minutes after work to be just quiet everything because my day is so hectic. And so if we can help our kids notice these things that will help them regulate, that's what that's the whole goal, you know, is to teach them how to help themselves regulate. It's not bad that we get angry or overwhelmed. Like, all of these are normal human feelings, but they are normal human feelings that we, to live in a society, we need to learn to deal with, you know, and we need to learn whatever tools will help us calm down from that situation so we can continue about our day. Because when we're adults, we have to continue about our day. You know, we don't get to, we don't get to melt down. We will lose our job if we freak out because we're overstimulated or angry, or, you know, like, there are real life consequences as adults. So teaching them to notice what they're feeling and giving them the tools, if it is that they need to step away, if they do need to take a few minutes and just listen to some calming music or read a book, or, you know, just take some time to themselves. If they do need that physical presence to help them calm down, okay, then ask for a hug. Is your body feeling, just getting them to notice what's going on in their body is going to play a huge role in how they're able to regulate as they get older.
Oh, this is so important. It really is, especially if we want to break the cycle of rage and repair. You know, everyone yells. Then it's like, oh, I'm sorry, I yelled. I feel terrible that I yelled. Or worse, in some families, we don't think, but I know families that, you know, wow, their discipline is, you know, physical discipline. And then there's sort of a constant cycle, right? Somebody knocks over their milk at dinner and everyone's crying, and then someone blows up and starts yelling. And for those folks who are sort of trapped in that cycle of yelling and rage and repair, and then, oh, I'm sorry, I feel guilty, and everybody feels bad, and then they try to put it back together, but it's not on a solid foundation, so it happens again. What would you say to them? I had a parent ask me about this the other day, and what would you say? How do we break that cycle of rage and repair? I told them I would ask you when you came on.
I mean, I always recommend to everyone to find a good therapist. that is my first suggestion, because it has taught me much about myself. It has taught me so much about myself that I'm like, oh, wow, this is why I do this. And it's really hard to change these learned, ingrained habits of yourself when, one, you don't understand why you react that way. And two, you're all alone, because when you're having these moments where you're acting out of your values, you know, this isn't how I want to act with my kid, it's a very lonely place. And you do feel shame. You know, you feel shame, you feel embarrassed, you feel all these feelings, and that can cause us to shut down even more. And when you're sitting in that, like, shame spiral, that's not a healthy place to be either. So having someone to work through these feelings with, who you can go to without feeling the shame and getting the tools, I think that's more valuable than anything. And it has helped me so much in my journey to change so much about myself and just to understand myself. So I think that is also huge. But I mean, you know, I tell my kids all the time, like, you can say sorry, but if you're still doing the exact same thing, that doesn't really show them you're sorry, you know? And we're going to continue to mess up on our journey to, you know, try and be better. Like, that you should say sorry, you know, we should always be apologizing to our kids, just like we want them to apologize. But unless we're really doing the work, then it's going to ring hollow, you know, just like I tell them, it's ringing hollow if you're not doing work to change it, you know? Yeah. So whatever that work is for you, you as a parent need to do that work. Our kids, our emotions are not our kids' fault. You know, that's a big right. thing. You can say, I'm sorry I did that, but you were just making me so angry. Like, no. You're sorry you did that because you didn't have the ability to regulate yourself in that moment, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's on you as the parent. That's never your kid's job to make you feel better, you know? That is your job as an adult to figure out what you need. And that's why my go-to is therapy, because it will help mm-hmm. you so much in that. But also, like, reading books on child development so you can understand why they're doing that, you know, not taking yes. things so personally. It can be really hard mm-hmm. when, you know, you take your kid out for this awesome day, you're so excited, you plan this awesome day mm-hmm. for them, and then by the end of it they're exhausted and they're crying and they're not being very nice, and you're like, I planned this amazing day for you, why, like, I don't even want to do anything nice for you anymore, you know? When in reality, like, that amazing day was great, but it was also overstimulating and exhausting, and they're not freaking out at you because they don't appreciate you or what you did. They're freaking out because of, you know, normal human things. They're biological needs. They're exhausted. They're whatever. So I think also realizing that we don't need to take our kids' behavior personally. And I think that probably is even, not that I have a teenager yet, but I've been a teenager and I was not a very nice one, that as they get into teenagehood, we expect them to know better. Like, well, you should know that that was inappropriate, that that was mean, and that was hurtful, you know, like, and the brains still aren't fully developed. And actually in teenagehood, they're going through the second biggest leap of their entire lives in their brain development, you know. And their brains aren't really developed enough for, you know, the risk factor. So they don't understand how risky their behavior might be. And also hormones. The empathy factor, you know, exactly. Like, there's so much going on with them that, I mean, with kids, it hurts to hear, like, I hate you, or you're not, you know, whatever they're going to say when they're angry. But I think with teenagers, it probably hurt even more because they should know better, you know. So not taking things personally, doing the work on yourself is that's what's really going to lead, I think, to be the parent you want to be, because it's so hard to do it alone. And you don't understand. Mm-hmm. We're not trained. We're not, you know, we weren't trained in child development. We're not trained in therapy, you know. So get that outside help. And there's no shame in it. You know, it will make you a better person and a better parent. But you need to be the one to seek that out. It's not just going to come naturally. And you're not just going to, you can be more aware. I mean, and doing your research about it and reading these books and learning strategies to implement is also a very important step. But until you have the ability to understand yourself and what's going on in that moment, just like we're trying to teach them, it's going to be really hard to implement any of this. So there's a lot of work that you have to do on yourself as you're working through the work you're trying to do with your kid.
I really appreciate you saying that. You know, we collected some questions from parents since we had a chance to visit last. And that theme that resonates. Almost every problem I see here could be helped so much if parents had counseling and community. Mm-hmm. Community. You know, in Indigenous tribal culture, when you become a mother, you join the matriarchy. You change your hair. You change your name in a lot of cases. You change your clothing, the kind of clothing that you wear. You sit in a different place at stomp dances and ceremonies. You join the matriarchy. And during that time, when you're expecting your baby, the other women talk to you. They teach you. They help you understand some things about parenting and what you're going to do. And you have this community of mothers and grandmothers and aunts, and they're all, you know, we're all at different points. Everyone's an elder to someone else, right? So if you have a newborn, somebody who has a two-year-old seems like the wisest person alive because, you know, they got that much experience. And yet I see in mainstream culture, there isn't that community. You know, people feel like they're just sort of on their own, or they're trying to make it and they don't know what to do. And so this is why I really feel like the therapy and the counseling is so important. I have a question here, and I think it's really interesting, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this. But do we have unrealistic expectations? Like, you know, the birthday party. You spend all this time planning this birthday party, and your child bursts into tears. Now mm-hmm. you're disappointed. Mm-hmm. You're frustrated because you wanted this to be a core memory of their life. Or you thought, oh, I love the zoo. You know, I'm going to take you to the zoo. You're just going to love the zoo. And all they see is a bunch of large, scary animals. You know, and now they're yes. frightened. They want to go home. And you're like, but I packed all these snacks. It was my dream to take my child to the zoo. And then Instagram, oh, yeah. of course, doesn't help, right? Where everyone's children are perfectly posed for pictures or whatever. And you just, this question is really helpful. Do we have unrealistic expectations of our how parenting should look?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. And I've, mm-hmm. I mean, I remember taking my son to the Renaissance Fair when he was like, almost a year, not even a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I have such fun memories of the Renaissance Fair, and I was so excited to show him. And I yeah. thought, you know, there's going to be horses there, and he loves animals, and, mm-hmm. you know, I was just so excited to show him everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at the, you know, we're at the horse show or whatever, and I'm like, look, guys, look at the horses. And he is just, like, fixed on, like, some random passerby with a hat. You know, that's all he cares about. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I spent this whole day. Like, of course he doesn't understand, you know, of course he doesn't really care about this. His eyesight isn't even developed or he could probably see that far, you know, like I'm just so excited to show him all these things. And then I'm disappointed when he's not as excited as I am or when he's not focusing on what I want him to focus on or when he's, you know, crying instead of watching, whatever it may be. Yes, I think we mm-hmm. do have unrealistic expectations. I mean, I'll take him to a show because I love theater and I want to instill that love in him. And he does great for the first half. And then the second half, he's like, can we go home? You know, and I'm like, it's still going on. It's still happening. You know that. But I also, I know in my thinking brain that is unrealistic to expect a three-year-old to sit through a three-hour show. You know, that's ridiculous. Of course he wants to go. Of course he wants to go home. But I think as parents, we can, the unrealistic expectations, yes, absolutely. Which is why I think it's mm-hmm. so important to understand childhood development, you know, so you're not taking these things mm-hmm. personal, you know. You just understand mm-hmm. that's not where they're at developmentally yet. It's not, it has nothing to do with, you know, with, oh no, he doesn't like this, or I didn't, the plan that I made, it, you know, it fell mm-hmm. through and it, you know. We can't take those things personal. And I think social media definitely portrays an unrealistic, you know, I just know whenever I see these posts of these kids doing these amazing things or, you know, as a teacher, it's funny because you see these classrooms that are, these kids are working perfectly and these sensory boxes are beautiful. And I'm like, man, I set up a sensory box and it's destroyed in 3 minutes, you know, and I have to remind myself, okay, this sensory box picture was taken before the kids even started playing. You know, I stop feeling yeah. bad about myself because my sensory box doesn't look like that. So I think that's just normal that to get excited about something and to forget where they're at developmentally and to feel mm-hmm. made to feel bad about, you know, that what we did, it was not as beautiful and lavish and it didn't turn out the way that these people did on Pinterest or on Instagram, you know, because what they're sharing is very carefully curated. And I'm sure there was absolute chaos after that picture was taken, you know?
Right.
So and, definitely you know, having realistic expectations will help in that.
Right. That's right. And that's where learning about child development, your suggestion is so helpful because a friend of mine told me the other day, she said, she's just so worried about her child and all. And I was like, what happened? And she said, he just won't sit still in church. Well, if you go to church in the South, that is an all day affair. I mean, you just, mm-hmm. I was like, really? Mm-hmm. So he probably isn't going to sit for 90 minutes. You know, he's just probably not because he's two. And so at two, you're just, you know, does he enjoy the music? Like, did he like the music? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, okay. He can get the rest mm-hmm. later, you know.
Yeah.
Christmas, holidays, Halloween, all these things. People have these fantasies of what they should look like. And I think a lot of times trying to reparent ourselves also
Mm-hmm. You know, we want to have the Christmases where, you know, maybe we grew up in a chaotic household, so Thanksgiving was a big mess, and now we want it to be picture perfect. And yet we find out that there are, you know, face swapping programs and all kinds of things to make pictures look like everyone's having a great time, you know, and, you know, people are photoshopping and all kinds of stuff. Right. And I was talking to one of our parent friends, and she was talking about Christmas and how cute our pictures were. And I told her, well, we have a family tradition. We wear Christmas clothes all month, all Christmas long. We celebrate all 12 of those days of Christmas, and we wear from just like the day after Thanksgiving until the Epiphany, we wear Christmas clothes, and that way we can take cute pictures at any time. We don't have to depend on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day to get it right.
Perfect.
Right? So if you see us look cute, we had 30 days of trying.
I love that.
Right? I mean, so then there's no pressure on Christmas Day. Look real cute while you open your presents. Nah, I already took a picture of you on the 17th wearing a Santa suit. You look cute. And so I think we have to change some of that. And that brings me to another question a parent submitted. And I know you'll be able to answer this one so well. Because I'm going to jump in on this one, too, and say, what about those of us who didn't have any tools, the cycle breakers? Right? Like, I think a lot of us are cycle breakers. We're actually, we think we're doing a terrible job, but we're doing way better than what we were raised in. You know?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
You
absolutely.
Know? I mean, you know, but
you know,
then we look at the toolbox.
Yeah. There's a concept of the good enough parent. I don't know if you've heard of this, but, you know, they...
I probably am this.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we should be striving for, is what they're actually saying, is the good enough parent.
Wow.
Because if we're overly concerned with giving our kids these amazing experiences, and every day is curated for them, and, you know, every minute of their day is planned, and or on the, you know, on the flip side, that we just sit them in front of a TV and we don't really care, you know, we just have a technology babysit them, you know, we want to fall right in the middle, because that gives them the independence that they need to, you know, play independently, which is what we want. You know, if every moment of their day is spent entertaining them so they're not bored, you know, they're not going to learn how to deal with boredom. If we're not giving them the interaction they need, then they're not going to learn those social skills and those regulation techniques. So if the good enough parent is someone who puts their energy into understanding their child, and who gives them the tools they need to grow into independent people, instead of being, you know, hovering over them and fixing every problem and making sure that they don't feel any hurt or pain, which is what I know we all want, but maybe not, isn't what's best, you know? So being the good enough parent is actually the ideal spot, because then we're not burning ourselves out, and we're not feeling the resentment of, I did so much and you're not appreciative enough. And then that leads to, you know, feelings that we don't want to feel either. So if we can feel confident in our ability to give them what they need to thrive without feeling like we need to overload them with 100 different activities and all the things we see on social media, then, you know, that puts us as parents in a more regulated spot. And it makes us more confident in, you know, I don't need to be this perfect parent. And the studies show, that being good enough is good enough, you know, that's what raises the people that we want. So I think we can all give ourselves, you know, a little credit that we are doing what we can. We are learning. We want to grow, you know, and I think that's a huge thing too. Like, we want to be better than what we were raised with. We want to.
Absolutely.
We are seeking it out, you know, even listening to this podcast, you're seeking out better ways, you know, reading books, getting the therapy, listening to the books and podcasts, and you know, taking the time to understand your kid instead of just rushing to a judgment. And all of these things are what most of us didn't have. And so just going through our lives living this way is cycle breaking.
Yes. Thank you so much for saying that. Also, I thank you for giving us so much grace. you know, because I think a lot of people think that somehow they're being judged by an invisible judge, and if they don't do a great job, mm-hmm. their children will end up, you know, incarcerated or something, God forbid. Mm-hmm. And really, it's going to be all right. It really is going to be all right. You know, if it's not all right now, we'll help you get there. It'll be all right. We have to go to break, but when we come back, we have some more Q&A, some more parent, actual parent questions for Miss Bethany.
Ooh,
we'll be right back.
Can't wait.
Lord, can you come and save her? Let her believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back once the world forgave you.
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcasts for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcasts. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage. Scroll down to Featured Podcast. Click on Play or click on Subscribe for more programs. Or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come. Another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
The COVID-19 vaccines can be our chance to get back to our plans. Who we are. What we miss. To get back to each other. To life. But it's okay to have questions, like, how were the vaccines tested? In rigorous clinical trials among adults of diverse backgrounds. Can the vaccines give you COVID-19? You cannot get COVID-19 from a vaccine. Why should I get vaccinated? Protecting yourself also helps protect the people around you. Find the latest information at GetVaccineAnswers.org.
Here's an idea. You've heard of the notion of pay it forward. It comes from the 2000 movie, Pay It Forward. Basically, the premise is helping someone with no expectations of payback, providing assistance to someone, passing information on, simply doing a good deed for a total stranger, and instead of allowing them to pay it back, ask them to pay it forward. Doing favors for other people and asking them to do the same. The principle is the same as multi-level marketing, except that instead of soap or vitamins, it's generosity between strangers that is being passed on. Pay It Forward is mentoring. It's volunteering in your community. It's shoveling a neighbor's snow or cutting an elderly person's grass for them or taking a senior to the store. Don't wait for someone else to do something good. Do it yourself. It starts with you. Talktainment Radio strongly embraces the notion of pay it forward. In fact, we just did.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Meet Norm. He lives with anxiety, but with the help of this latest innovation from Be Normal, he can be normal, just like everyone else. With the swipe of a finger, you can project happiness, confidence, machismo. Why settle for being real when you can be normal? The Normal Maker. New from Be Normal.
This item doesn't really work because there's no such thing as normal. We're all different. What we like, how our brains work. In fact, 1 in 5 of us live with mental illness. Don't filter who you are. Start by talking to someone you trust. And remember, there is no normal.
Miss Bethany, I am absolutely loving this conversation. And I want all of our friends who listen to be able to connect with you, maybe join your beautiful online program, which is not just preschool now. There's primary pals. So we have lots of spaces where, you know, Bold & Bright Academy can help your family and your children to have a wonderful learning experience. Will you tell us about that, please?
Absolutely, yeah. We have our online learning platform that is now for, we have classes for kids from 2 to 10 years old. We have a library of hundreds of on-demand classes that they can learn from with printables and learning games. And then we also have our live classes 2 to 5 days a week, depending on how many days you want to attend school. You can find more information about that at boldandbrightacademyonline.com. You can find some clips from classes on YouTube under Bold & Bright Academy. We're also on all the socials at Bold & Bright Academy, so you can definitely check us out there. You can always set up a meet and greet with me or our other teacher, Miss Angie, to discuss your child's learning and if this would be the right program for you.
Beautiful. That's wonderful. I just want to say thank you to you for Bold & Bright Academy and for including us in it. It has made a tremendous difference for good in our life and our family, and I'm very grateful for it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. I love hearing that, and you too have made a difference in my life too.
Oh, that's wonderful. I wonder if at the core of it all the Christmas cookie pictures, all of the school day pictures, all of the core memories, I wonder if how our children feel is really the most important thing. You know, when we switch to instead of saying, we did all these great fall activities, we did all these things, you know, and we took pictures. My children felt a lot of love this fall.
Yeah,
whether
absolutely.
That looks
yeah.
like a trip to the pumpkin patch, or whether it looks like we had a fun time making s'mores or something, it doesn't really matter. What matters is the love that they felt. Like, did our children feel loved by us at Christmas or whatever holiday we may celebrate? Do our children feel loved by us in this moment, rather than making it sort of an invisible checklist? Because when we compare ourselves with other people, we will always be unhappy. We just will, you know.
Yeah.
And so that brings me to another parent question. These wonderful parents who are doing a great job. Yelling. This parent says she was raised in a house where people yelled a lot. And she always said she would never yell. She doesn't want to yell, but it just comes out. She just yells. She yells when she's angry. She yells when... you know, she just yells. How does she break the cycle of yelling?
Once again, I think therapy. I always suggest therapy. But also, in that moment, what is going on? I think a lot of times when we have that, when we grew up in a house with a lot of yelling, it is our first instinct to yell to get attention, to stop the behavior. A lot of what I've had to kind of do for myself is understand my own boundaries, understand why I'm putting these boundaries in place, understand if these are indeed boundaries that that work for us. You know, we're not going to have the same rules as my parents. You know, if my kid doesn't spend the entire time at the dinner table with us because he's 3 and we may take longer to eat and he is having a hard time sitting there, is that a hill I'm willing to die on because I think they need to join us at dinner the entire time? when in reality, expecting a three-year-old to sit for a half hour, 45 minutes in a high chair, that's probably going to cause problems, you know? So looking at my rules and my boundaries and figuring out, why do I have this rule? Is it still working for our family? And if it is, then putting that boundary in place by helping them, because, you know, they may be jumping on the couch and you don't want them to do that, whether it's because it's not safe, whether it's because you want to, you don't want your furniture messed up, you know, or whether it's just because in your house growing up, that was a thing for your parents that you got yelled at, you know? Is it a problem for you that they're jumping on the couch? If it is, hold that boundary, and you may have to physically remove them, you know? And you told them to stop jumping on the couch, and they didn't, and you go over and you say, I told you we can't jump on the couch. It seems like you're having a hard time with that. I'm going to help you with this. I'm going to help your body, you know, figure this out and take them off and physically remove them. And then maybe if you have a trampoline, put them on the trampoline. You know, if you have outdoors, set them outside and they can run around and get that energy out. Or maybe you realize that I don't actually care if my kids jump on the couch. You know, it's safe. There's nothing that they're going to smash into if they fall off. And that's actually just a rule I had in my old house growing up that I don't think needs to be a rule here anymore, you know? So figuring out what your boundaries are, holding to those boundaries, but realizing that just because things were done a certain way in your house growing up, you don't necessarily need to abide by those rules. If this is not a boundary or a rule that is serving you and your family, then you don't need to enforce it. And maybe that is something that you need to work on with yourself to say, oh man, I'm really triggered when my kids jump on the couch, even though I don't really know why, because, you know, it's an old couch and it's safe and I actually don't mind that. You know what I mean? Or, you know, my husband at dinner, it is a struggle for him because my kid likes to, you know, he's three. He eats with his hands sometimes and he likes to, you know, make a mess. And we were at dinner the other day and I was just watching my son and he was just kind of playing with his food. And I was thinking in my head, like, wow, you know, that's a fun, I have to remember that food is a sensory thing for him at this age. You know, that was what was going on as I was watching him play. And I could tell my husband was thinking like, oh, he's playing with his food like that. Like, oh, no. Like I could tell, you know, I could see it in his brain, you know. And it was funny because I didn't say anything because, you know, he's got to work through his own things just like I do. But at the end of the meal, he's like, man, I just get so triggered at mealtime sometimes. Like growing up, my dad used to, you know, he used to flick my head if I would do something like that. And I hated that. And I just get so, you know, I get so triggered. And I was like, you know what? I was just watching you, realizing that you were getting triggered. And I, in my head was, you know, with my childhood development background, I'm like, oh, it's a sensory thing, you know? But I was also realizing that, you know, my husband's not thinking it's a sensory thing. He's thinking like, oh, why isn't he using his table manners, you know? And then watching that happen and watching him realize, like, man, I am so triggered by this behavior and I don't know why, you know? Oh, wait, no, I do know why. It was because I was punished for it when I was a kid. Like, I was punished for acting like a kid when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And just, like, watching him not take that out on my son and keep his mouth shut while he worked through his own feelings about it and then figure out his feelings about it was, like, such a moment for both of us, you know, to realize, like, oh, that's not a boundary that we have to have because, one, it's not developmentally appropriate, and two, like, what harm is it doing? We're going to wipe his hands anyway, you know? Like, why does that need to be a boundary, you know? So I think just realizing that a lot of the way we grew up, we don't have to parent our kid that way. That does not have to be a boundary for us. But things that are a boundary for you, you need to stick with it and help them with those things, you know, because they don't understand the boundary. They may not understand why this is a bad idea, and they may not have the self-control to stop in that moment when you need them to. So instead of yelling, what can you do to enforce that boundary? Because if this is a boundary that you want to hold, you're going to have to help them. And sometimes that means physically removing them from the situation, you know? Sometimes it means removing yourself from the situation. Sometimes it means creating a safe environment for them or redirecting, you know, for throwing toys, you know? Okay, this is normal. Kids want to throw. That's cause and effect. They want to see what's going to happen. But I know they can't throw this toy that's going to break. So I'll say, You know, instead of saying, stop throwing the toy, I'll bring the ball. And I'll say, wow, looks like you really want to throw something right now. We can't throw these toys because they'll break, but here's a ball. Let's see how far we can throw the ball, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
kind of just getting creative with helping them meet those boundaries that you're setting.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. I have one more question here I want to ask, and I think it's really touching, but I think you're exactly the person to answer it. Why do I feel like everything matters? This parent feels like if she doesn't get everything right, she's failing at parenting, and she's failing her child, and her child will be a failure. Wow, that's a lot to walk around with.
Have those feelings as well. And thankfully, my husband is a lot less prone to like worst case scenario, because my brain always goes to worst case scenario, you know. But you know what? Just like we put unrealistic expectations on our kids, what unrealistic expectations are we putting on ourselves? And you know, my therapist always tells me. First, she asks, you know, when I'm saying these things about how I feel about myself, she asks, "Would you tell that to your child? Like, if your child is struggling with this, would you tell them you're failing? You're not doing this right. You don't care enough. You're failing. You're not good at being a good kid or a good grown up or a good whatever. Like, no, you need to be a caring parent to yourself, just as you are a caring parent to your child." And she says that to me all the time. And every time she says it, I'm like, ugh. I know, but it's so hard. Uh-huh. It's so hard in the moment, because all we want to do is our best. And when we feel like we're not doing our best, then we must be doing our worst, you know? And that's not the case. We're humans. We are doing the best we can with the knowledge and the skills that we have. So all we can really do is gain more knowledge, gain more skills, and gain some empathy for ourselves. Be the caring parent for ourselves that we either didn't have, or that we're just not being, you know, like, if I would never tell my friend, oh my gosh, you're being an awful mom. I can't believe that happened. I would say, oh my gosh, like that sucks. That's so hard. I understand you. I understand your feelings, you know? So why can't we do that for ourselves? Because we need, and another thing my therapist says is, you know, right now, you may think that Silas doesn't notice these things, but as he gets older, he's going to notice that you're not living what you preach. You know, you're preaching to him that mistakes are okay and you're so cool and we learn from our mistakes and we are not our mistakes, you know, and yet listen to the way you're talking about yourself. And he's going to realize that mom doesn't preach, practice what she preaches. And I'm like, oh, you're right. You're right. You know, I need to be able to be that caring parent for myself so he can believe what I'm saying to him. Yeah, it doesn't ring hollow to him, because he goes, oh, mom says all this stuff about me, but look at the way she thinks of herself. You know, how can it be true what she's saying about me when she doesn't even believe it about herself, you know? So I think it's really important, the language we use about ourselves in front of our kids, like talking badly about ourselves in front of our kids is we don't want to do that either, you know, because they understand, you know, they want to see that you're giving yourself grace when you mess up, just like you're telling them, give yourself grace when you mess up. If you're not doing that for yourself, how can they believe that it's okay to mess up for them, you know?
Yes. And, you know, that's where community comes in also. You know, it's important to have that trusted counselor. It's important to have friends that love you and family members, mentors, you know, conversations like this, even, that let people know you're not alone and there's better ways to do things maybe, and you'll do better later. But right now, you are so loved, just like you are. You'll do better later. You will. But right now, you are so loved, and we love our children so much. And we love you, Miss Bethany. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, of course. I always love coming in and talking to you. These conversations are great. I love having them.
I do too. I'm already looking forward to when you come back.
Me too.
Oh, thank you to all of you who joined us today. You are so precious to us. We appreciate every sponsor, every donor. This is a labor of love. And you keep us on the air, and we're so grateful. We thank Miss Bethany for joining us today. And we thank all of you for this beautiful conversation. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'll see you next time.
Oh, Lord, can you come and save her? Let her baby pick it on her knees and pray her. Then pray her and never look back.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.